Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm editor Candace Gibson, joined today, as always, by Josh Clark.
Yes, you are.
Josh, I'm going to turn the tables on you a little bit. I know that you usually like to ask me questions.
I love it.
But I have one for you.
Okay.
What happened to Mordecai?
Mordecai the donkey?
Mordecai the donkey.
You know, I know what you're talking about. Mordecai the donkey, the official, first official live mascot at the DNC, the Democratic National Convention. He was debuted in January, right? And then dropped off the face of the planet. Ultimately, to answer your question, I have no idea what happened to Mordecai. He may have had an accident in the Grand Canyon that was up by, you know, Democratic spinsters. I'm not sure. I'm hoping Mordecai's okay, but I have not seen nor heard hide nor hair from him.
If any of you listening know what happened to Mordecai, I'm dying to know if that little ass made it to the Mile High City. So especially Barack Obama, if you have time, if you could just give me a call. That'd be fabulous. In other news, there, as far as I know, was never an elephant slated to appear at the Republican National Convention.
No, I hadn't heard anything about that. It was all Mordecai.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what it was. Maybe, you know, Mordecai was going to steal the spotlight, and the powers that be said, hey, if the GOP isn't going to have an elephant, you guys can't have Mordecai there.
Well, it's equal media coverage. It's actually a law handed down by the FCC. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. There's a loophole here or there, but yeah, they have to have equal media coverage for candidates.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that other mammals are involved in that at all, if the FCC extended it that far, but it could be a safe bet, I would say.
Well, even without the mammals, those things were zoos enough. There was a lot going on.
Yeah.
A lot flying around.
So you've been paying attention to the conventions?
I have. I certainly have. The big question, Sarah Palin, hair up, hair down, who knows?
Yeah, you never can tell with her, can you?
Nope.
No, but didn't you find it a little odd that there was going to be a donkey at the convention?
Well, I'm a petting zoo aficionado, so at any opportunity a live mammal appears that I can scratch under its chin, that's fine with me. But yeah, I get what you're saying. I mean, these things aren't exactly austere ceremonies, but they are pretty serious. It's a time for business, and so you have to wonder, why a donkey?
Why would you lead a braying jackass into a national party convention?
That's just weird. We're talking about mammals at the conventions?
Oh, okay. Wait, yeah, so was I.
Oh, my bad.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I see what you're saying now. Well, you know, I mean, the donkey's not even the official mascot of the Democratic Party. Did you know that?
I did know that.
But did you know that the GOP actually did at one point adopt the elephant as its official mascot?
A true story.
Okay, so I had heard actually at one point in time that neither party created this symbol. They were just kind of there and associated with it. And it all came down to one journalist, an editorial cartoonist named Thomas Nast. Is that fact or fiction?
It's faction. It's sort of fact. It's sort of fiction.
Nice.
Thomas Nast, he was German-born. He moved to New York City when he was six. Mm-hmm. And New York City has always been a real center for political and cultural and social hubbub. And so from a very young age, he was infused and positively, you know, swept up in all these ideals. And he showed artistic talent at a very young age. And mm-hmm. it sort of blossomed into a great political cartoonist's career. And he certainly adopted the donkey for the Democrats, but he can't take credit for first assigning that animal to them.
Oh, he wasn't the first then?
Not with the donkey. In 1837, there was another political cartoon. I'm not sure who drew it, mm-hmm. but this one depicted President Andrew Jackson, well, former President Andrew Jackson, really, still trying to sway...
Well, now dead President Andrew Jackson.
Yeah.
Super former.
super former. Still trying to influence Democrats, even though he'd already left the White House. And so the Democratic Party was portrayed as a donkey, and he was sort of pulling on it. And the donkey is a stereotypically stubborn animal. Mm-hmm. And so that showed the dichotomy there between the lack of influence and the unwillingness to be influenced. And sort of stuck.
So Nast picked that up and started using it?
Well, he ran with it to a certain extent. He used the donkey to portray Democratic journalists, and specifically copperheads.
Oh, yeah, the anti-war, anti-union, and I think in Nast's opinion, racist northerners, right?
Right, right. He was not fond of them at all, and so a donkey seemed the perfect animal to show, you know, sort of stubbornly and relentlessly clinging to very dead ideals. And one of the cartoons that he drew that featured this copperhead representation was right after Edwin Stanton had died, and mm-hmm. that was Lincoln's Secretary of War during the Civil War. And it showed the donkey sort of kicking his corpse. And it wasn't Edwin Stanton's corpse. It was a lion that essentially embodied him. But he used the donkey to sort of turn the party on its head and make statements about the press and really put the press in a bad light. In another of his cartoons, it showed the donkey clad in a lion's costume mm-hmm. trying to scare off all the other animals around. And this was back when Ulysses S. Grant was up for his third term reelection.
Right, right. So the donkey in that case represented it was the press again, wasn't it?
Yeah, sort of a foolhardiness.
It was stirring up the other animals in the forest.
Right.
But there was an elephant in that cartoon too, wasn't there?
Another one of the animals in the cartoon was the Republican elephant. And we're not really sure what the elephant is supposed to symbolize as far as the Republican Party goes. I mean, there's certainly generalizations that we make about elephants. Do they really scare easily? Do they never forget? Do they have fabulous trunks?
Well, one of the things I noticed from Nast's cartoons is that it's almost like he assigns the attribute he's looking for to either the donkey or the elephant based on, you know, his feeling or what he's trying to convey at that moment. There doesn't seem to be any particular part of either of those animals that he felt embodied each party, mm-hmm. which, I mean, really probably by now would have switched anyway, right? Because weren't Republicans formerly social liberals in Nast's time?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And now they're social conservatives.
Yes.
Yes.
Agreed, generally, sure, yeah.
Generally, right. And one of the more famous instances of the elephant being used, it's sort of clumsy and it's stumbling. Mm-hmm. It's about to fall into a pit that's labeled, I think, oh, gosh, what is it labeled?
Like inflation and chaos and, you know, instant death, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that sort of thing. So he did use them to his advantage. And what's interesting about Nast is that even though he was a journalist, he worked at Harper's Weekly 24 years, I think that was 1862 to 86, mm-hmm. he was not unbiased. You know, today we would like to think that most journalists are unbiased.
Sure, definitely.
He was not. He made his opinions very well known.
And apparently the other members of the press did as well, like the Copperhead Democrat press.
Mm-hmm.
I think back in those days, everybody kind of had their own voice, their own outlet. You know, and you're starting to see a similar division today, don't you agree? Where, you know, the right has its own news outlets and the left has its own as well.
I think that's perfectly natural. I mean, people want to read things that align with their own points of view.
Sure.
And what's interesting about Nast is that he really did levy these cartoons to work for his advantage. And I don't know if I'd go so far as to say that his cartoons were propaganda. I think they were making definitive political statements. But I don't know that he was trying to corral people into his corner like a piece of propaganda would, even though he did create the character of Uncle Sam that we know very mm-hmm. well. And that did grace the image, at least, grace the front of a very famous piece of propaganda, the I Want You poster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also when you look at Nast's cartoons, you get the impression that there's almost like a certain amount of fury or rage or anger or disgust in them. So, you know, it's kind of the opposite of propaganda. It's more like, you know, pointing out the stupidity of believing believing the opposite of what Nast believed, you know? Do you kind of get that impression as well from the cartoons?
I do. I do. I see a lot of that latent in them, and I can picture him at his desk, you know, sleeves rolled up and furiously working on one of these drawings, and they did serve a purpose. He actually created a bunch of characters of Boss Tweed mm-hmm. and actually brought down that crime ring,
yeah.
not solely by himself, but his art definitely helped indict Boss Tweed.
Yeah, and I think Lincoln and Grant both credited Nast, his cartoons, with helping them get elected. So clearly
yeah.
he was having a pretty big impression on people.
He was. He even impressed Mark Twain, a very famous cynic.
Yeah.
Who commented on his artwork.
Yeah. Well, thanks for clearing that up. So it was faction, you said.
Faction.
That's a new one on me. I like it.
Well, thank you. And stick around to learn about which famous symbol graces the walls of Josh's cubicle. And that would be Magnum P.I., symbol of all that is brawny, manly, and right with the world.
He's the symbol of my party, the Beach Bum Party. Love
oh.
Magnum, yeah. it is true. So thanks for telling everybody
of
that,
course.
Candace.
You can read even more about these political symbols in Why Are a Donkey and an Elephant the Symbols of the Democratic and Republican Parties on HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.